Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 11th annual Primary Purpose Workshop. A little bit of housekeeping. Let's start with the Lord's Prayer after a moment of silence. A long moment of silence. Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. So we have Peter M. from Boca Raton, Florida, speaking for us today. Give him a warm welcome. He will go ahead and call the breaks, and we'll do lunch about 11:45-ish. So give Pete a warm welcome.
Good morning. My name is Peter, a recovered alcoholic. And I apologize for this voice. I got sick as soon as I got here. Anything below 80, I'm allergic to. Grateful to be here. Again, thank the group and Sean and Nicole for hosting me and get to share my experience and hope with this work, this big book in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have found that over the years, more and more, the longer I'm sober, I'm convinced that they're all vehicles to have a relationship with God. Whatever your God is, whatever understanding you have of this God, whatever experiences you have. The thing about this power called God is can't comprehend it, our book says, can't understand it, but we certainly can experience it. And if someone's new and kind of not sure about this power called God, we're sitting in an AA meeting, yeah? And which is consists of a group of drunks, G-O-D, for good orderly direction. And at the end of the day, what the book asks us, am I willing to try something new which does work and let go of something which doesn't work? And what's going to fight me over and over and over again, and I found even as long as I'm sober, it still gets in the way, is ego. Because the ego does not want any part of a workshop like this, does not want to even look at the big book. Because it might die if it does, which is the goal. Daily dying for successful living. But something has to happen, and I found from my experience, I have to be in a place of be willing to be made new. I have to bottom out. And the bottoms, whether it's Park Avenue, Park Bench, it's the emotional bottom that gets every one of us. I've been beat up and arrested and homeless and all of those things, and somehow you tend to bounce back and you shake it off. But it's the emotional bottom that gets all attention. That's something that happens in the soul. When the big book says we conceded to our innermost self we were real alcoholics, that's the first step in recovery. Not the first step on the shade, but the first step towards getting better. That's a soulful event. That's a submitting under pressure that I'm licked and I can't do it anymore. Some of the best things a youngin can tell me when they sit with me is when they say I'm tired. That's usually a plea for help. I'm done running the show. And so we look at the 12 steps, and when I first got sober, it was the furthest thing from my mind to do 12 steps. I thought it was for like the old timers, and they had like the Dead Sea Scrolls in the back of the room somewhere, and they'd come out and pontificate, and we had to grab whatever we could. But it's open to all. And to my surprise, this God, as our book says, doesn't make too hard terms to those who earnestly seek. Why would God make it difficult to love him when he's always trying to love us? This God is going to any lengths to get our attention. Constantly going to any lengths and is incredibly patient with someone like me. Am I willing to go to any lengths to meet this God? And am I patient with God's journey with me? But as an alcoholic, I'm impatient and I want to be served on my terms, in my way, in my time. And it just doesn't work like that. When we talk about step 3, it is really about playing by someone else's rules and not mine. Am I willing to submit to that? And over and over and over again, we'll look at if I'm having a problem with any of the steps, I always go back to step one. What changed on my willingness to go to any lengths? Well, maybe based on my actions, I don't believe I'm alcoholic anymore. Based on my actions, I will tell you, my name is Peter, I'm an alcoholic, but if you watch my actions, no step work, very little prayer, kind of have a sponsor, not really sponsoring people, I sit in the back of a meeting and leave early, I believe somewhere that I'm not alcoholic anymore, that I'm in control of this whole journey. And what I tend to do, because I've done this, is seek comfort rather than change. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, like many of us, with lots of identities because I really didn't know who I was. And what prayer, what God, what the steps do is bring death to every identity that does not come from God. And the ego is going to fight for its life. I came in here thinking I was a really nice guy, Joe All-American, who was misunderstood and a little bit overserved. And the guy I was always looking for was that guy, a really nice guy who was misunderstood and overserved. I never found him because he does not exist. Many of us think somewhere that I'm really a good person. And I had to get rid of that. And I will tell you, and I'm not, you know, there's not false humility. I'm not a nice guy left untreated. Left untreated in AA, I'm not a nice guy. I lie, I manipulate, I embellish. My ego's in the conversation. My ego's doing the talking. I see the world through the mind. I hear the world through the mind. I act through the mind. I interpret through the mind. That's the filter. That filter is broken and interprets every experience I'm having. And it's all led by the ego. Left untreated, I'm not a good guy. Treated, I can be a lot better. There's a lot more I have found than just going to an AA meeting and having a cup of coffee and passing a number out and, you know, having a service. That's all good. But there's so much more to this. And the longer we're sober, we really need more dependence on God when we're sober a while than when we first get here. Because when I first got here, everything was new and I just did in Rome do what the Romans do. And I had nothing really to lose. I owned nothing. I was wearing my brother's clothes. I was living in a halfway house. But then we start to acquire stuff, yeah? We start to get the relationship. We start to get the car. We get the little clothes. We get a little AA job. We get some money in our pocket. And suddenly that stuff becomes important. And that stuff is really who I'm serving and who I'm worshiping. How can I serve God when I'm a slave to everything else? That stuff, my attachments to things, becomes my God. I do not want to be made uncomfortable. I don't want my job taken away. I don't want her taken away. Don't touch my money. And I got a little rep in AA. Do not push that aside. And the question is this. In order, if I wanted to have a relationship with God that was rock solid, traction with God, but be a guy who sits in the back of the room, works with people, goes to meeting, is a member of good standing, but completely unnoticed by many. Would I take that exchange to be right with God, or would I not do that because I want to be the center of attention at a meeting? What lengths am I willing to go to? So when we look at our big book and we look at step one, I always took a look at where am I currently? Am I in a place of dis-ease and discomfort or ease and comfort? Am I in a place of acceptance or daily surrender or resistance? Am I telling God what my will is for him rather than seeking what God's will is for me? Am I in this thing for compliance or am I in a place of surrender? Do I realize this is spiritual life or spiritual death? Because once I become blocked from this power called God, I start to fall out of the saddle, yeah? And then I'm on my own. And little by slowly, I start to drift. And then one day you hear that I'm drunk. I live right on the beach, actually. And I love going down to the beach. And every once in a while, when I'm in the water, there's a little undercurrent that's happening. Nothing drastic, but you can feel it when you're in water, just a little undercurrent. So I'll have my beach chair here, and I'll go straight out into the water, and I'm out there swimming and having some fun. And then when I get tired, I turn around and head back to shore. And sometimes I can't find my chair. And I realize it's about 50 feet this way or 100 feet that way. And what I did was, little by slowly, I drifted away. Alcoholics Anonymous is very much like that. I'm out here, and I'm not doing inventory. I kind of have sort of a prayer life. I'm not meditating. I'm actually going backwards through the steps. And when life hits, and it will hit, because life is problematic, we live in a world of impermanence, and sometimes it just seems unfair, and I need to get back home to this God. I can't find it. Where did it go? Well, the chair didn't move. God didn't move. I drifted. And it's subtle. And sometimes I'll drift so far and it's too late because the only thing that I know how to do is drink. And as an alcoholic, step one tells a guy like me that I'm going to drink, period, non-negotiable. It doesn't care how long I'm sober. I am going to drink. Unless I get spiritually fit. So I've been a runner. I love long distance running. I've been doing it forever. And as I got older, you know, my knees don't allow me to do that so much. But I always like to train and go in the gym. And the last time I was running, I hurt my knee pretty good. And I had to lay off of running for a while. And then I started again. And I started to get on a treadmill. I like to weight train a little bit and keep this body in shape. And I noticed after a while, the endurance comes back. And you feel a little bit better about your body. It's a little bit more in shape. And so then we get physically fit. Well, Alcoholics Anonymous for me has been what I like to call the spiritual gym. What am I doing to work out in Alcoholics Anonymous? What lengths am I willing to go to? Am I willing to break a sweat in here and do some inventory and spend time in prayer, have communion with God, take direction from a sponsor, and be right in the middle of this? Because someone like me, if I begin to drift, I get drunk. We have 43 pages in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that talks about step one, plus doctor's opinion. The rest of the steps are broken up into pages. 6 and 7 is a paragraph each. 10 is a page and a half. Step 11 is about 2 pages. But we have 43 pages that are dedicated just to the problem. And 17 to 23 talks about the body, and 23 to 43 talks about the predator, the four-letter word called the mind, which is always going to screw me around, all the time. That's what its job is. And then we talk about the spiritual malady. 43 pages. Because they knew when Pete Marinelli came in, they probably said, listen, there's a guy, Pete, coming in 1988, and we can't give this knucklehead from New York like a couple of paragraphs. We got to throw pages out for him to get it. 43 pages. Yeah. The only thing the mind can do is go before or later on. The mind cannot be present. That's all it does. And if we think about from the time we woke up this morning to right now, think about how much chatter we had in the head this morning. Anyone drive here alone in the car? Was anyone alone? Yeah. So if you think about it, you really weren't alone in the car. Because if you think about the dialogue, you had about 45 people in the car with you. And they're waiting for you when you get back in the car. I was saying last night, we wake up first thing in the morning in the middle of an argument because those voices are continually going. And a lot of it's pride and ego. So how do I meet myself if I'm not new? Where do I get step one to meet me? Where do I have the book meet me? And on page 30 in the big book, there's something that kind of like a bit of a qualifier. And it says this. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. And on page 21, they talked about the real alcoholic, not the moderate or the hard drinker. This is the cat who's got the body craving, the mental obsession, and the spiritual malady. This is the person like me that doesn't want to drink. I better not drink. I can't drink. I shouldn't drink. And then I drink, and I have to have a second drink, and then I have to have a third drink, and the whole thing comes tumbling down on me, and I come out remorseful, wondering how did I get into it? I need to do something about it, and I get drunk again. It's what I do. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove I can drink like other people. I can't even live like other people. I can't even live like some members in Alcoholics Anonymous who put the plug in a jug and go home. this is a very narrow road in which the book is asking me to walk here, through a very, very narrow gate that I'm about to pass through, and everything needs to go. The process of recovery is never by addition, it's always by subtraction. The more removal, the more God. The less removal, the less God. Am I willing to be completely changed, fundamentally different, be made different? Be turned so much into something new that I don't even know what it's going to look like. And here's where the ego kicks in. How I dress, what meetings I go to, what I do for a living, what my relationship is like, how much money I think I'm entitled to, all of that stuff has to be changed. It's none of my business. Bill talks about emotional sobriety. How do I do with life out there? Do I come into an AA meeting and be very forgiving and like Moses and I'm very like Moses-like when I'm in AA, live and let live? We forgive them, patience and tolerance. But yet when I'm out there at work and life hits, I don't look anything like that because I always do what I always did. The idea that somehow, someday, we will control and enjoy our drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing, and we pursue this into the gates of insanity or death. I can die from alcoholism without ever putting a drink in me. I read a frightening statistic a couple of years ago. Someone gave it to me at work. That more alcoholics commit suicide sober than drunk, which was quite alarming. I will die from alcoholism without ever putting a drink in me because life is just too unbearable. I do not have a GPS to go through it. And at some point, I came to the realization that meetings alone are not going to treat what I suffer from, and that's called alcoholism, not wasm. I need to be here. I need to be working with people. I need to seek this God. And the direct vehicle to that, the menu, takes me to God. On page 52... to meet me where I currently am, we have something called bedevilments. And bedevilments is something that torment, frustrate, and harass me. And it says we were having trouble with personal relationships. Now, they're not talking about the occasional spat we'll have with our spouse or maybe an argument with the kids or a coworker. They're talking about trouble in personal relationships, outwardly or inwardly, calamity in the head. I mean, I've always got a constant dialogue of people who wrong me. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, last night. It's a constant rumbling. And when Joe walks in the room, I feel that little bit of tension in here. When Mary walks in the room, I feel that tension. And I start to character assassinate in my head. This is going with me constantly. Can't control my emotional nature. Prey to misery and depression. I wake up at 6 o'clock. I go to pour a cup of coffee. And then I put milk in and I knock the milk over. Or I break a shoelace and I go, up, it's going to be one of those days. Or the weather's not cooperating and I need to move. Or just something. We're just on the edge all the time. I'm full of fear, which is the evil and corroding thread. Fear permeates everything. When we talk about inventory, we'll see how the entire inventory is really about fear, showing up, manifesting in many different ways. A feeling of uselessness and I can't make a living. Are these things tormenting, frustrating, and harassing me? There's been plenty of times. I'm 60 years old now. In July, I'll be 61. And I'll sit on my couch. I'm saying, oh, my God, I got a beautiful view of the water. The boats are going by. It's beautiful and warm out. The sun's out. I have a good job. I finally am an owner of what I always wanted to do. Money's good. Relationship good. The health is good. The house is good. The car is good. The neighborhood's good. The sun is good. The beach is good. Everything's good. I'm good. And then the head says, yeah, but remember that time? Or what my head tells me often is, you know you're going to be 60. I'm feeling really great. And then the head says, you know you're going to be 61. How many more years do you think you got left anyway? You better do something. Go hiking, camping, snorkeling, travel, do something. Because your time, you know, you're on a short end here. And I go from feeling elated about the life God has given me to, oh my God, I'm going to die. And my entire day is ruined. And I'll walk with that, and then you'll ask me, how you doing? I'll tell you, I'll lie to you. I said, I'm doing good. I'm so grateful. No, I'm not. I'm just looked at my mortality, and I'm super depressed. And that quick is how the mind will shift, and that's how fickle the mind is, this failed system. I cannot do this work with the mind. This is a soulful walk. what I need to do is get rid of the mind as quick as possible. But here's the challenge. I have no power to do that. I don't even have the power to do inventory. I don't even have the power to get off my butt and get to a meeting. Everything comes from this power called God. What's my relationship look like with God? How much dependence do I have on God? Because if I don't have dependence in God in one area, that's how much of self-reliance I have going on. And once I'm involved, I have a little dishonesty. I have some resentments, a whole bunch of fear. I start to lie because it's not really going to hurt anyone, the thing called the white lies. And when our book says we have to live a life which demands rigorous honesty, I'm a hypocrite. Lying about any area of my life corrodes the ability to be honest in every area of my life. How I do anything is how I do everything. Yeah. So if you come to my apartment and you look at my bedroom, the bed's a mess and there's stuff all over the place, that's how I do everything. Even though my car might be clean and my clothes are clean right out of the dry cleaner and I just got a haircut and a shave and from outward appearance this guy's got his stuff together, then you look at my apartment, it looks like a crackhead lives in there. That's how I do everything. The rest is just to impress you. How I live inwardly will determine how I live out there. So where am I currently with bedevilments? So when we talk about step one, I have found if I have a reservation or a lurking notion, I can sit in big book study after big book study, and all I'm going to do is acquire information but still lack a transformation, which is the goal. Because God's about to take us to places that we can never volunteer to go to. What alcoholic like me is going to willingly submit to putting his life on paper with inventory and then share it with another guy, and in that inventory is a sex inventory? There's no way I'm signing up for this, but God will take me to places I can never volunteer to go to. Because what goes on in the step work is the ego gets starved and the spirit gets fed. We get soul food in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is vital. Step one says we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I always thought unmanageability was, well, I was in an abandoned building. I rarely bathed. I had filthy clothes on. I reeked. I was dying of alcoholism. I was running around with hepatitis C. I'm urinating blood. I got I weigh about 130 pounds on a good day. And all I can do is drink and eat pills. Now I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I put on weight. I look relatively human. I have clean clothes on. I'm eating regularly. And from outward appearance, say, this guy looks pretty good. And the old timers would say, you look good. You sound good. Keep coming back. So my head says my life is now manageable. And now I'm gold and I don't need to do anything else. And what I look to do is now keep the external conditions running smooth. Have all my ducks in a row. But the essence of that word unmanageability in step one is I don't know what the day is going to look like when the drink calls and I go and I cannot stop it because power is what I lack. I could be in here for a while and then for some reason this head starts talking to me because I'm not spiritually fit to get a drink or a drug and I go and I cannot think that through. I work in the treatment center business for a long time and I disagree with basically everything they do. Because if I had a dollar for every time they were telling people, and we hear it in AA, think the drink through, play the tape to the end, keep it green, remember the pain of yesterday, remember where you come from. If that worked, none of us would be here this morning. We wouldn't even need God or Alcoholics Anonymous. I have right thinking to say, hey, I got burned last time, let's move on. But that doesn't work. So the essence of unmanageability is me thinking, well, my life looks good, so I'm gold now. The essence is I don't know what the day is going to look like when a drink calls and I go. I'm walking on a minefield waiting it to blow, and there's nothing I can do about that. I will drink, and I will get drunk, and once I get drunk, I can't stop drinking. In the middle of step one is this little hyphen, this little dash. I just thought Bill was a good writer. He put a dash in. He must be an English professor. They always do those things to connect two thoughts together. But my sponsor showed me something quite interesting. There's two parts to step one, first half, second half. That little dash, yeah, in the middle becomes a vertical wall. And as an alcoholic, all I'm focused in on is having my life look and feel manageable. I am seeking comfort all the time. And I can't peek over the wall to see that the first half of the first step says, Peter, you're drinking. You're alcoholic because your power is over alcohol, which means I don't have choice and control in the mind before I even pick up a drink. I'm totally screwed. We always say in AA, Joe or Mary relapsed, and we know what they mean. It's kind of our language. But in reality, they didn't relapse. They're drunk. Relapse happened while they were sitting here at the table having a cup of coffee, chairing a meeting. The relapse was on. So I don't have power, choice, control in the mind before I even pick up a drink. What areas of my life are out of integrity? The hidden secret sex life. You know, when I was coming in, we had no cell, and it wasn't that long ago, no cell phones. I didn't have a computer until I was sober about 5 years. Now, on your phone, you can go into your bedroom, gamble, order food, watch porn, and not come out for 6 months. Where's Joe? I don't know. He went back there 6 months ago. I haven't seen him. Lots of distractions. What areas of my life are out of integrity? What's my prayer life like? How's my diet? When was the last time I exercised? That kind of stuff. When we talk about enter the world of the spirit, experientially, can I talk about that? Now, if you're new in here, I don't expect you to, but if we're around here a little while, not perfect, but can I give a talk on what it's like living in the world of the spirit based on experiences? Can I talk to you about my relationship with God? Do I have any skeletons in the closet that, God forbid, if anyone ever finds out, I'll be mortified. They'll block me out of an AA meeting because I have a secret life on. Those secrets become plaque on the soul. And I'm wondering why I can't connect with God or with you, because I have another life going on that no one's going to see except me. And if I'm seeing it, I'm giving it okay, because it's me. I will tell you, you shouldn't do that, but I give myself permission to do that. And that's full-blown ego. Yeah. Then I pick up a drink, and I have no power, choice, control in the body. It's called the allergy. While I'm drinking, I'm thinking about the next drink, right? I count money on how much liquor I'm about to buy. It's not like 40 bucks in your pocket. That'll get me a couple of pounds. Okay, good. So while I'm drinking a pint of whiskey, because I didn't have a big barroom career, by the way. I didn't like being in bars because I knew I was going to get thrown out at some point. I go to the liquor store, get a jug, and go hide out. And every time while I was drinking, I was thinking about, well, I only have this much left. I have to go out and hustle money because I know I'm going to need another. It wasn't about I'm just going to have a little. I hear folks in AA, bless their hearts, saying, when I was out there partying, if I was still partying, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. This was drudgery. This was work. This was torment and frustration and despair all the time. There were no good days. The first drunk was a good day. After that, I was all downhill. It was nasty. Having to rob from your kid brother, who has a little busboy job and keeps his money in the top drawer, maybe 30 bucks. Over a few weeks, he saved this because he's trying to buy himself a pair of runners on his own and be responsible. And you take that as if it's yours. That's what I would do. You know, steal from my... anything that wasn't nailed down, I'd speak and I'd steal and be okay with it. That's what I do. So where am I currently unmanageable? What areas of my life am I in self-reliance or current agnosticism? And I like to just hit on that about current unmanageability. When we're sober a little while, how does step one meet me? I haven't had a drink in 5, 10, 15, 20 years or better. Does step one still apply? Absolutely, because I'm still alcoholic. When I don't believe God's going to work in a certain area of my life, and I've had that. You know, when I was going through a divorce, I felt like I failed as a man, and God's not going to help me feel better. God's not going to repair this. My wife's never coming back. When my mom died, I was completely upside down. What happened to God? Over the years, I've had times where I was about to file for bankruptcy. I've been out of work, health scares, burying people. Where's God? I need to repair this because God is not going to repair it. That's called current agnosticism. I'm not doubting a God out there, but he's not working this area of my life. Usually if we break up with someone and we have a broken heart, we think we're about to die that day. Oh my God, he or she left me. I want to die. Until we meet someone else, we don't remember the other person's name anymore. Right? because I don't believe God's going to fix me. I lose my job and the money's really tight. I'm never getting out of this. I need to do something because God's not working in this fast enough. That's called current agnosticism. And the thing about current agnosticism, it leads to fear. And fear brings current agnosticism. And if you're like me, I put my hands on the wheel, so now I'm in self-reliance, which makes more agnosticism and more fear, which means I have a whole chunk of current unmanageability going on. I'm spinning out of control. From outward appearances, I look like I got it together. Inside, I'm blowing up. I will die from 1,000 cuts, not necessarily one wound. A big book says the more hopeless we feel, the better. When I'm in that place, I'm willing to do anything. I'm willing to do anything. I don't care what it is. Sponsor told me to do this. I think a lunacy commission should be appointed for my sponsor. He's telling me crazy things to do, but I'm going to do it. Prior to that, I'd rather be ruined than changed. And now I'm willing to be changed, whatever that looks like, turned inside out. But it has to be better than what I was doing. Based on my experience, nothing has worked. Based on what we've done thus far, how's that working out for me? I still have this thing called struggle. I'm still struggling in this area of my life. I'm still struggling in that area of my life. And then I was given some information which I didn't like to care about hearing. When my sponsor said, struggle is an illusion, it's a mask to the truth. There is no struggle. You just don't want to let it go and do not want to be changed. When you have the 12 steps, you have a fellowship, you have service, and God oversees all of that. Your way out is that path. Why are you still struggling? There is no struggle. I like struggling. It allows me to be left alone and get attention. There's a payoff to it. I'm still struggling with the sex addiction. I'm still struggling with the gambling addiction. I'm still struggling with this resentment. I'm still struggling with the food. No, you're not. I'm willing to be in that. I go from victim to volunteer. We have over 200 fellowships that pull people out of whatever addiction they're in. Why as an alcoholic do I think I'm so special that I can't get out of this? Carl Jung told Roland Hazard, you have the mind of an alcoholic. Our big book says the main problem for us sin is in the mind rather than the body. And over and over and over again, they point to the mind. That is the predator. That is the main problem for me. When our book says lack of power is our dilemma, with power, no dilemma. It begins in the mind because I don't want to use the soul. I want to use the mind. I have more faith in my mind than the body. I'm going to be directed by two things, God or the head. There's no third door. And a book says we go on to the bitter end or accept spiritual help. Go on to the bitter end because I'm living life based on what my head tells me to do or accept spiritual help. I do life as God says. So I get painted into a corner after 43 pages. And for me, I had to look at my experience coming in here. 7 treatment centers. I picked up a drink when I'm 14. At the end, I cannot stop drinking. I walked into my 5th rehab with track marks all over my body and abscesses on my arms because I got into narcotics. I couldn't get enough of that. If I was using narcotics nowadays, I probably would have been dead based on the way it's out there right now. And going into my 5th rehab, I didn't want to go back to that stuff anymore. I was always sick. It was dirty. And I thought I could handle alcohol. And I was in for a rude awakening. And in 1988, when God separates me from alcohol, I'm living in an abandoned building. I have no morals. I have no integrity. I was a slave to alcohol and my alcoholism. Whatever it told me to do, I did. It commanded me and I would run with it. My sponsor asked me a question one time. He says, were you involved in your last relapse? And I says, of course I was. He says, no, you weren't. The only thing you did was go to the liquor store and buy liquor. Alcoholism made a decision for you and it took you on a leash to the liquor store and you had no input into that. What involvement was that? I had to be convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated me. Self is the other person, that shadow that follows us around all day, that other guy. The one who's always talking to me about what I should be doing rather than seeking God. The one who's always entitled, always in resentment, that other guy. How can I be rid of self? Now, here's a consideration. We had to be rid of self. Our book talks about this over and over again. I had to be rid of self. Relieve me of the bondage of self. But how could I be rid of self if I think I'm a self and not spirit? It's almost cliche. We've heard it so many times. How's it go? We're spiritual beings having a human experience, yeah? I believe I'm actually the self and not a soul and not spirit. So it's a silly example, but if a fly or a mosquito was to land on my arm, on my hand, my first thing is to swat it off. But as an alcoholic, it lands on me like alcoholism tattoos me at some point in my life. Oh my God, I'm alcoholic. And I believe I am the fly. And I start walking around the living room buzzing and flapping my arms because I believe I'm the fly. I forgot I'm human. With alcoholism and self, I believe I'm actually those people. I'm no longer soul. And that's exactly how alcoholism works. I lose sight of this godliness, this inner resource, that sixth sense our book talks about. The godliness in every one of us, it's in our DNA. We were called to sanctity whether we like it or not, guys. That's been my experience. We were born to be saints. The crackhead in the crack house right now, according to God, was born to be a saint. But I don't believe that because I believe I am the self. I am my alcoholism. I am my drug addiction. That's who I am. Well, it looks that way, but we lose sight of the soul. And what the steps do begin to is die to self, and I find the soul. And then we begin to believe, like I started to, and certainly not perfect, believe I live from here and no longer from here. The quicker I dump my mind, the freer I am. Yeah. When I'm convinced of this stuff, based on my experience, I move into step two. My sponsor had me look at the first 9 pages of Bill's story, which is his story. When we go to a meeting, we tell the story, what it was like, living life on self-will, what happened, the transformation, what it's like now living in the world of the spirit. The first 9 pages of Bill's story is what it was like. Now, Bill was a stockbroker from New York. What if I'm a homemaker from Nebraska? I was a longshoreman. I can't even count to 10 without a committee meeting, let alone, you know, a stockbroker. How do I identify with Bill Wilson? And my sponsor says, do you identify with how Bill drank, thought, and felt? Absolutely. And pages 9 to 16 of Bill's transformation. What resistance do I have looking at the 9 to 16 pages when he starts talking about Zara the heavens? You know, turning everything over to God. What kind of resistance do I have going on in me? That's my current agnosticism. So my sponsor had me write out my story in a couple of pages, what I was like. And I read that to him and identified with Bill Wilson. I didn't need much convincing when I got here that I'm alcoholic, but I got to a place of starting to get what alcoholism really is, that I suffer from alcoholism, drunk or sober. I still have alcoholism. Step two says we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And chapter to the agnostics begins on page 44. And for me, the most significant line in the entire big book, and it's just, I say this for myself, is lack of power. That was our dilemma on page 45. That sums me up. I don't have power to do anything. It appears I have power, but in reality, power is flowing through and out. I don't have power. Bill says, of myself, I am nothing. The Father doeth the works. And I get sober a while, and I think somehow I have power. My power, not his power. I'm like a bowl of Jell-O. You shake it, and it wobbles. Oh, there's nothing. No spine, no nothing. No substance to it. That's how I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for some reason, I think, because I've been here a while, that I'm like rock solid on my own. I'm going to be in for a rude awakening. So step two is the pointer to the solution. It's also the pointer out of insanity. So I thought step two dealt with insanity, period. But it isn't about that at all. I'm insane in step one. Based on my track record, I keep doing the same thing over, expecting different results. And the very same mind that tells me it's going to fill the hole is the very same mind that keeps digging the hole. Step two is a pointer out. And chapter two, agnostic, tells me how, where, and why to find this power called God. Well, where do I find God? We were driving over here. Sean's got this insane-looking GPS. It's the size of this table, you know. It's ridiculous. It's huge. And, you know, he punches it in, and the GPS tells you right where to go. But it doesn't say God. It gives you a destination. And I can think that I'm going to find God in him or her. I'm going to find God when I get that money. I'm going to find God when I get that job. When I'm going to find God when I move here. And it feels really wonderful, but then it gets old after a while. That the journey is always an inward journey. And when our book talks about in chapter 2, agnostics, all I need is willingness. A mustard seed of willingness, tell the mountain to move, it'll move. But it begins with surrender. Our truest form of beingness, real truth, is a spirit of surrender. And I'm willing to surrender everything. I can take a look at what they're talking about. Where do I find God? It says the great reality is deep down within. The dope fiend in a dope house and the drunk under a bridge right now has just as much God in him or her as we do this morning. As the drunk under a bridge has just as much God in him as the Pope in Rome. God's not a respecter of men, says, I'm going to give you more than you. It's open to all. The difference is the awakening to it, the relationship with it. I had none when I came in. Well, my God was a vodka bottle or Jack Daniels bottle. That was my God. I'd do anything for it and protect it at all times. I'd sell my soul for a pint of whiskey. So we all have this thing in us. And what I need to do is stop going out there and begin to go in here. But I don't know how, and I don't have the endurance to do that kind of walk. But God could, and what if he was sought? Am I willing to seek this? Am I willing to look at my current ideas, attitudes, and emotions, which are driving me, and try a new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes? Yeah. How do I find this God? It's simple. I have to lay aside old ideas, my prejudice, my contempt. My whole lineage had a prayer. God, please let me lay aside everything I think I know about the big book, the 12 steps, AA, and you, God, for an open mind and a new experience. God, please let me see my truth. Our book is telling us how you believe. They're not going to take issue with that. They're just asking you to put it aside for a moment for a new experience. Am I willing to lay aside things? So I'm Catholic. I'm a cradle Catholic. And we all read the headlines. People have complained there's no taxes on their property. And the Vatican's probably worth billions. We all have those complaints. And that's what I would focus in on all the time. Was I willing to lay that aside? Just for a moment, to have a new experience. Here's what made me willing. Step one, I better. I'm not in a position to negotiate right now because my negotiating keeps getting me drunk. So I'm going to put that aside for a moment. And I'll believe in your God because you seem to got it to have it together. I'll believe what you believe. And why? When we see other people solving their problems upon a simple relationship with this power called God. I had to stop doubting the power of God. The God idea worked, my ideas did not. Back to step one. Based on what I've done with my life, how's that working out? And our book tells us how, where, and why to find God. It's simple. Because something is profound, it doesn't have to be deep. And because something is deep, it doesn't mean it's profound. Our book is simple and easy to follow. It's going to require some work. But they don't complicate this because God never complicates it. When I have a complicated relationship with God, I'm the complicator. I'm the producer of confusion. I'm the actor. I'm the director. Then I'll sit in the producer's chair, and all I make is more confusion. And I look at worldly clamors to cast out God all the time. It's what the ego has to go to. Yeah, if there was a God, well, how come this? And if there's a God, how come that? But I keep getting drunk. It tells me my own just my willingness alone, my own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. So I'm looking at step two as a pointer out that I'm going to be restored to sanity, not only with alcohol, but all areas of my life. Food, exercise, money, relationships, sex, gambling, whatever it is, all areas of my life. That this power is going to kind of take off the edges, smooth it off, and produce a new product. Am I willing to do that? So what my sponsor had me do is, I do this with my sponsor. I write down my old relationship God, what it was this God like growing up. You know, that punishing, damning God, that kind of thing, Old Testament stuff. What my relationship God looks like right now. And I write about that. And then he says, I'd like you to write out how you would like to see you and your God in the future. Just shoot for something. A loving, caring, forgiving, almost parental kind of God. And I put that on paper. I gave myself permission to put that on paper. And the great assignment was, I wrote down where I believe God's working in my life. I'm sober. Where I doubt or had skepticism he's working in my life. I'm not rich and I'm still single. Yeah, that's what I did. And I saw my doubt or had skepticism that God was working in my life. That was my current agnosticism, like I knew better than God. Where I was going to God not to be changed, but telling God how to change his stuff for me. I was pushing my will up against God. I would go to God and tell God what I want, and God always tell me, no, this is what you need. At some point, I had a shift. When I was growing up, they would, the older guys, if you were misbehaving, they would tell us, hey, you're out of line. Right. And that meant you were about to get in trouble. You're about to get slapped around or beat up. Hey, you're out of line, kid. Watch your mouth, watch your behavior. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I can be out of line with God. I'm not in line with his will. I'm not in line with God. Everything's out of integrity, and I'm wondering why I'm struggling. Step two is going to bring me to a place where I'm back in line with God's will, seeking God's will, and knowing how to hear it. That's the cool thing about waking up. When the soul is awakened, when we're being led by the soul, we hear different. We're given new ears. That voice that we never recognize becomes very recognizable. In fact, we're seeking it all the time. And the sight of self-will and self-reliance is very troubling. It's uncomfortable. When we're awake, we can almost hear the defects. You're talking to someone, and you can hear the defects starting to get closer and closer. I know I'm married, but she's awfully pretty. Where are we going with this, Pete? You can hear it. When we're sound asleep, we can't hear it. And we're right in the middle of it. Spiritually speaking, someone who is sound asleep is blind and can't see. When we're sound asleep, you don't see anything. You dream. Spiritually speaking, the daydreamer lives in delusion and fantasizes all day long. But spiritually speaking, when we're awake spiritually, we live in the spirit and we look for the all of God in everything we see love. We see forgiveness, we see patience, we see tolerance. And not that we just roll over. When something's wrong, we address it. But I'm able to report things as they are and see things as they are. I'm no longer living in delusion. But I come at it with love. When I tell a sponsee, have your fourth step done by Friday or find a new sponsor, I'm doing it out of love because he's about to get loaded. And sometimes the sponsor, you just got to hold on till he cries through the night and get him through that. It's coming out of love. Everything changes. A vision for us, a vision for you. Chapter to Gnostics, my favorite chapter, next division for you in the entire big book. It lays out clearly how I'm supposed to get to this power called God. We started at 8:30, Sean. Okay, let's take a 10-minute break and we'll come back. Fire.